Welcome back to the Boneyard Podcast, everybody. This is your host, Jared Chaffin, along with
Artemis Brower.
We're coming to you this week with episode 38.
38.
Yeah, 38. I think that's what it is, Artie, right?
Yeah.
Losing count already. But Artie, how have you been, man?
I've been good, man. I'm still recovering from that food coma I was in on Thanksgiving, so I'm finally coming back from that. Got myself back in the gym because I had to do that. But I've been good, man. I've been working. Might be making some changes to my work schedule soon. So
that's what I like to hear. That might make this podcast thing a lot easier.
Your boy might be getting a promotion and a first shift job. Hey. So but we're not going
to snaps to that.
It's not in the bags just yet, but it's looking like it.
Knocking on wood, even though I think that's just plaster. just know that I'm excited for that. I'm excited for big things for you, Artie.
Absolutely.
I know you deserve it. So, Artie, it's been a week since we've recorded.
Mm-hmm.
ECU football officially over.
Yep.
It's been kind of a slow week in news for ECU. So this is going to be we're not going to have as much to talk about this week as we usually do in ECU sports. But we're still going to, hey, we're here to put out content.
Hey, look.
Around anything we can talk about.
ECU basketball still going on. We still got content, baby.
ECU basketball still is got content. For sure going on.
Yeah.
And talking about ECU basketball, we got a former ECU basketball player on the podcast today. Honestly, one of the coolest guys that I've talked to and that I've known from ECU basketball.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of has a different path to becoming a D1 athlete, but his name's Peyton Robbins. If you're a Minji's maniac, if you're a true ECU basketball fan, you know who Peyton Robbins is. This dude, he played 19 minutes in his college career. I mean, he mentions it in the interview that, he wishes that he could have played more.
Mm-hmm.
He understands why, but like this man, he was a certified stud when he was there. He brought the energy. He was just kind of one of those good teammates, and I've talked to a lot of his teammates, and they've all said, "Yeah, like that guy was a stud teammate. We were glad to have him on the team." So yeah, really, really glad to have him on the podcast. Looking at it, Artie, the only other really football news that we have right now is Blake Prohl.
Yep,
he's declared for the draft.
Yep.
You want to talk about that real quick?
Absolutely. Let's get into it. I mean, it's a big blow. It's absolutely a big blow to ECU football. I was expecting Blake Prohl to come back for another season and possibly leave after next season. Personally, I think he should have come back, really built up his stock for the draft for next year. But Blake Prohl's a stud, and he comes from good stock. We've said this before. We know who his daddy is. So he is going to be successful whatever he does and wherever he goes, and I wish him nothing but the best. And he was an outstanding receiver for the Pirates. So best of luck to Blake Prohl. Hate to see him go. Wish he would have came back for another year, but he's going to be phenomenal. So
yeah, along those same sentiments. I mean, Blake Prohl, we wish you all the best. We thank you for all you did. But when he put out his letter to Pirate Nation, at first I was like, is this guy transferring? Like, that doesn't make much sense. Why would he transfer from ECU? But when I reread it a couple of times, I realized that he was declaring for the draft. And to me, I've heard differing opinions. To me, it makes sense why he would declare for the draft. I mean, maybe I'm looking a little deeper into it than some. But I'm thinking that, my thought on their thought process or their decision-making process was they realized that with the extra year of eligibility that a lot of these guys that are at these mid-major programs are going to stay for that extra year and kind of like what you said, bump up their draft stock.
Mm-hmm.
He was thinking, well, maybe I can undercut some of them.
Right.
Because even if he stayed another year, I think he's a seventh-round pick.
Okay.
If he stays another year, I think he's a seventh-round pick.
I disagree. I think he's borderline fourth or fifth. if he stays another year and is able to boost that stock.
And see, I'm thinking that he is that now, because think about it. With the supply and demand, there's not going to be as much supply this year going into the draft. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have these guys that may have been competing for one of those draft positions right. next year when there's more people coming out to declare for the draft. He's going to go ahead and go and do it. He's got his degree. He's going to go out. He's going to go to the NFL mm-hmm. and try to get some more money by going another round or two earlier.
Right.
I think now he's moved up to a fourth or fifth round draft pick, because I don't think there's going to be as many. And I could be wrong. I could be completely wrong on this. Yeah. I've been wrong before on the podcast. If I am, I'll say, hey, I was wrong. But I think what's going to happen with looking at the landscape around college football, looking at it, I think that he and his dad, I mean, his dad, his brother, and him, mm-hmm. I mean,
all wide receivers, Division I college football,
and they all know what it takes to get drafted.
And Austin's in the league.
Yeah, Austin is in the league.
So he's gonna, you know, that's you know,
so
like
I mean,
father like son.
So he said in his letter that, hey, I'm listening to the people around me, mm-hmm. my dad, like those are people that know what they're talking about.
Yeah,
we decided that it was the best decision for me to leave the program and go on to bigger and better things. So that's what he's doing.
And I just want to shout out, that's going to be another 336 kid in the league, because Blake Prohl is from right here in Greensboro, North Carolina. So
yeah, he is.
Just want to shout that out.
So, I mean, congrats to you, Blake. We're wishing you nothing but the best. We hope that you're playing on Sundays next year and for years coming on after that. I mean, I think he could be one of those Danny Amendola type guys mm-hmm. for an offense for the next 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
He's got the hands to do it.
He's got the hands. He's got the route running. He doesn't have the body just yet, but you're going to get there. The NFL is going to make you into the kind of receiver they want to make you into. I think he'll be just fine. And like we said, he's got the father that's going to let him know what he needs to do to prepare for whatever it is he needs to do in the NFL.
I mean, what better consultation could you get than having a dad and a brother who have both been drafted, both mm-hmm. played in the league, both played D1 football? I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. Listen to the guys that know.
Yeah.
Do what's best for you. I get it. We're a players podcast here on the Boneyard Podcast.
Yeah.
I mean,
that money. I'm all about the players getting that money.
I mean, because I saw Warren Saba tweeted out. He said, I'll make sure my client talks to y'all soon. So we'll have to have Blake Prohl on the podcast. I know we're talking Deontay Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Have him on the podcast hopefully soon. But I think to me it makes sense. To others, I've gotten several texts from people around the conference and around college football. They've asked me why.
Mm-hmm.
Why would he do that? And
yeah,
to me it makes sense. To others, it doesn't. I get it. But I really do think it's a supply and demand type thing.
Yeah.
I think looking at it, if there wasn't COVID, I'm sure he's back next year rocking the purple and gold on Saturdays.
And look, at the end of the day, he made a decision that was best for Blake Prohl. Blake Prohl made a decision that was good for Blake Prohl. Anybody else's opinions is irrelevant on that subject. So
and my thing is, I haven't seen anything. Sometimes when you see these things, people are mad at the player.
Mm-hmm.
Look, this is their future that they're
right.
Anytime they go out there on Saturday and play football, they're risking losing their dream of making the NFL by getting some freak injury. I mean, to me, it makes perfect sense. Blake, once again, we wish you nothing but the best.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna have to have you on, future friend of the podcast, Blake Prohl. Declaring for the draft, and I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing him end up somewhere. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing him end up in A-Town, baby. I mean, we can.
Well, y'all got plenty of receivers, man.
We could use another stud receiver. One of those under the radar type guys is what we need on our offense. We got the big names. We need one of those under the radar guys, and I think Blake Prohl, like I said, Danny Amendola type guy going forward. So, Artie, switching gears a little bit, I want to talk a little bit about another sport that's going on right now,
mm-hmm.
ECU basketball. But first, I want to talk about actually women's basketball first.
Yeah.
Knocking off a Power 5 opponent on the road in at Virginia in Charlottesville.
Both programs looking excellent right now.
Good win. I mean, they lost to Georgia, but Kim McNeil, Coach Kim McNeil, gonna have to have her on the podcast too. Doing a great job. I'm excited to see what we're seeing in women's basketball. And I'm also excited to see what we're seeing in men's basketball. I'm excited for both of our programs. So I just want to give a quick shout out to our women's team because I forgot to put it in our rundown, our weekly rundown, but it popped into my mind when I saw 3-0. I remembered. I was like, "Hey, wait! They got a win over a Power 5 team, and I believe I want to say they're playing Duke.
Yeah,
sometime soon. Duke's a hell of a program in women's college basketball, in both of them. But I mean, if you can get a win against Duke or a school like that, then we're talking. But ECU basketball, men's basketball. 3-0 for the first time
in about 7 years
since it was our, I guess that was our
freshman year.
Freshman
right?
year,
yeah, it was our freshman year.
They were 3-0.
18-year-old young whippersnappers.
And wow, and this is the first time since joining the American Athletic Conference that they've started 3-0. And
right,
I mean it's great to see. We mentioned that we were excited about the team Joe Dooley's put together. I mean, you had a lot of guys returning. A lot of these guys are still sophomores, juniors, so they're still going to be there. I didn't realize we have 3 7-footers on this team.
We're big. Yeah, we're big.
And that was the problem 2 years ago. We didn't have any size. Now we got all the size.
We're big and we're athletic. And that's...
We're long.
That is a double-double that you definitely want. Dooley, and we've been talking about this for a while. We kind of knew that he was going to build a program that was going to be respectable, going to be decent. Now, look, we're only 3-0. We're beating teams that we're supposed to beat, that we should beat, but we're beating these teams by double digits. We were talking about this before we got on, how important that is, because in years past, we weren't beating these, you know, the Radfords and the Austin PA or however you announce them, you know, by double digits. We were holding on, just barely beating these teams, or sometimes even losing to these teams. And so to be able to come out and beat the teams that you're supposed to beat, you know, we've got UNC Wilmington. Is it tomorrow? I think we have Wilmington.
Yep, Wilmington tomorrow afternoon, I believe.
And that's a great rivalry that we have with the Seahawks. And then we've got North Florida after that. And so we have a tremendous opportunity to start 5-0, going down to SMU. And SMU's no joke. That's a good basketball program. They're going to give us everything they've got. But to be able to be in a position to start 5-0, I don't remember a time when ECU basketball started 5-0 and had a chance to beat all of these opponents by double digits. We have a legit contender. I'm not saying we're going to win the American. I'm not saying we're going to the NCAA tournament. I'm just saying teams have to game plan for us the right way, or else they're going to be in for a rude awakening.
I wholeheartedly agree. I think that this team is a team that used to, and we've said it before on the podcast, used to, you came into Minji's and you said, okay, it's a dub.
That's an easy win.
Let's roll in, roll out, and get the job done, and we'll be done by halftime.
Right.
Now it's, oh, damn, we got a fight on our hands.
Right. Like, we got to legit play well to beat this team.
Yeah, and the only thing that I could say that I wish we would we can improve is some of our perimeter shooting. I mean, these guys, I mean, I don't have the stats pulled up right in front of me, but, I mean, I think right now we're like, some like 25% or so.
It's not too good.
From 3-point range, and we're a little bit better from the field, but overall, I mean, I think we could see some improvements.
Mm-hmm.
Now the one guy that has really stood out to me, Noah Farrakhan,
okay,
freshman, comes in first game. Now again, granted, it was against North Carolina Wesleyan, a Division III opponent. I mean, you play who you can schedule, especially during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in. There's no jitters for being a freshman and playing big minutes now. And he knocks down, I believe he knocked down 2 threes in that game.
Yeah.
And I mean, his first points were a 3-pointer that he just knocked down, stepped up, knocked down, and it was easy. And then you got guys like Baruti that can play, and then Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, for as much as you say as much as you say Noah Farrakhan, I think Tristan Newton
is
a guy that we need to watch out for. I think he can be a real breakout candidate. I think he can be the peanut butter to Jaden Garden's jelly. I really think they can be that you know, tag team duo that we need to see. I know that was kind of a lame reference, but fuck it, I don't care. I really think Tristan Newton, though, seriously, can be a breakout candidate for the Pirates this season. So watch out for him. Watch out the way he's playing, how he meshes with Jaden Gardner going forward. Also, yes, Noah Farrakhan is going to be a stud.
And then you got these guys that are the support guys, your Berutis, your Robinson White. You got these guys that can really, they play good defense. They play solid offense. And really the game plan on offense is and should always be get Jaden Gardner the ball. If you can get him on the block with the ball, money.
Right.
I mean, and then the guy's a walking double-double. I mean, even before playing this non-conference schedule in conference last year, he's a walking double-double. And, it was a shame that they left him off. I believe they left him off first team all-conference last year. He was second team all-conference. This guy has a legit shot at being conference player of the year.
He can be player of the year. Jaden Gardner can absolutely be player of the year in the American. I know it's a long shot. I don't think it's a long shot. I think the kid, like you say, he's a walking double-double. He's averaging 20-some-odd points for the Pirates right now. That's absurd to be averaging those kind of numbers
in college basketball. He also averages usually double-digit in rebounds.
Right.
And sometimes I've seen him have a triple-double. He's had triple-doubles in college basketball. You don't see that often.
The kind of guys that do that in college basketball are lottery picks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he can absolutely be player of the year in the American. You just don't want him to be the only option. That's all. You want teams to have a healthy respect for the entire basketball team. You don't want them to just walk in and say, okay, as long as we stop Gardner, we'll beat this team by 30. And I don't think that's the case. I think we have to be able to find a number two, number three option that's going to help Gardner. Gardner's still going to be the star. He's still going to be our number one. Yeah. But, you know, to kind of make us more respectable as far as other teams looking at us.
And, I mean, I think Newton, Robinson White, and eventually Farrakhan can be those number two and number three guys.
Right.
Newton was that number two guy last year for most of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You look at it, and these guys can compete. And like I said, they're all sophomores and juniors. They've got another year together.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they stay and play next year, they got another year. And Joe Dooley they've built a quality team, a team that I think can compete with damn near anybody. And I was looking at it yesterday. I didn't look at every team in North Carolina, but, you know, ECU is one of, I know, what, two teams are 3-0 in the state of North Carolina. And guess what? Neither of them are Duke or Carolina.
Yeah.
There, it's NC State and ECU. Now, yeah, granted, ECU did play North Carolina Wesleyan. They have another Division I game against UNCW, like we talked about yesterday or talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
That game's winnable. That game,
that's a very winnable game.
That game, I think you can win that game by double digits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like about this team, this ECU basketball team, is the ECU basketball. Usually in past times, you would say, oh, well, this game's going to be a nail biter if we're going to keep it close.
Yeah.
This game's going to, like, if we're going to have any shot at winning, we're going to have to win on being able to be up 5 points with 2 minutes left.
Have to play with a lead and have to keep that lead.
And have to shut down and trade blows in the last couple of minutes. No. Now, ECU is down double digits with nine minutes left in the first half yesterday against Radford. And
didn't get flustered,
came back, went on like a 17-0 run,
yeah,
ended the half up double digits,
yeah,
and then
they won 63-50,
and
you know?
Yeah, that's the type of team that they don't get down on themselves. They keep it going, they keep it moving, they say, all right, hey, next man up, we're gonna chip away at this. And then their defense, this may be the best Pirate defense that I've seen. Their ability with speed to get back down the court and play a solid defense, a solid zone defense, I don't think anybody can top that right now in our conference. I mean, maybe Houston. Houston's a top 10 team. But Joe Dooley has these guys playing with character, playing hard, hustling. I mean, against Wesleyan, they're jumping on the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, to get the ball back. That's I don't want to take a shot at anybody that was on those Lebo teams because that's not their fault.
Right.
But they, I don't feel like they were really passionate behind Coach Lebo.
No.
Dooley, and Igo tweeted it out yesterday. He said, you can really respect the type of coaching that Joe Dooley does when I mean, he's when he's coaching in an empty arena. You can actually hear him talking to the guys.
His passion.
And he's passionate. And that's what we've needed at, for ECU basketball. It's a shame we fired him the first time.
Mm-hmm.
We could have, I mean, we could be a blue blood now if we would have kept him.
Yeah, we kept him. Yeah, maybe.
I mean, but that's one of those things. I think that ECU has a good shot at being 5-0 after this week, after this following week, and then going against SMU to open up conference play, I believe, right after. Mm-hmm. It's either right before or right after Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ECU, this is a team that could be start off 7-2, 6-2. Like, this is one of those teams that the next couple of games, if ECU really finds their gear, you're looking at a scary team that could honestly finish fourth or fifth in the conference.
In the conference, right. And look, if you haven't followed ECU basketball before, which most people have not, now is a good time to get excited about ECU basketball. Now is a good time to jump on the bandwagon. Don't wait. Jump on it right now, because what we have in the works right now is, you know, to me, is going to be something special. I'm not saying, like, you know, we're going to win the conference, like I said, this year, or we're going to go off to the NCAA tournament. I don't think we're there yet. I think by next year we could be there, but do not be shocked. Like you said, if we start 7-2 or 7-3, you know, we're keeping it interesting in the conference this year. I could really see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, I could too. I think that our schedule is winnable.
Mm-hmm.
We can. This could be the year where we see a 20-win basketball team and mess around, make the NIT, or, I mean, you get a good bounce in the conference tournament. Guess what? Pack your bags.
Yeah.
We're going dancing, baby.
We're going dancing.
But we're not going to get ahead of ourselves yet, but we want to talk to a guy that, I mean, he played on the CIT championship team
mm-hmm.
back in 2013. He was a walk-on for ECU. Let's go ahead and send it over to our interview with Peyton Robbins. Those of you that don't remember Peyton, he was one of those guys, like I said, he was a great teammate. He walked on, played under Lebo, played with a lot of stud players at ECU.
Mm-hmm.
He's an interesting cat to talk to. I enjoyed that. So, yeah, here's our interview with Peyton Robbins. This week on the Boneyard Podcast, everybody, we are excited to have what I call a pirate legend in ECU basketball coming on the podcast. We're excited to have him. His name is Peyton Robbins. Peyton, you walked on the 2012-2013 team, first year, freshman year. You win a CIT championship. You were involved with honestly one of the best teams that has ever been fielded by ECU basketball. You had a pretty interesting career, but I want to talk to you first about what you're doing now and how everything's going with you right now.
All right. Well, yeah, first of all, I appreciate you having me on the podcast. I'm excited to be here. But right now, I guess 4 years out of college, I'm currently working for a public accounting firm called Ernst & Young, and more in their risk consulting group. So I've been there for around a year and a half. I float around with a couple other jobs prior to my time at EY, but it's all been the more finance accounting background. So that's what I'm doing now.
Sweet, sweet. And like I mentioned, you were part of that CIT championship run. What can you tell me about how that year went and kind of being a part of that team?
That year was probably, to date, the best year of my life. I mean, coming in my freshman year and then not having – first of all, I didn't know what the CIT was when I got there, but then being able to experience like a 24-win team, winning a ring and playing in April, the last thing I thought I was going to do is play in April in college basketball. Only like, I think six teams get to play in April. So that whole year was just, a great experience. It was the best year you could possibly be a freshman. Like, that started off my career. I couldn't have scripted it any better. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. And I can't speak for Jared, but I know I've always had a dream of like walking on and being a D1 athlete. What was it like to walk on and actually be a Division I athlete at East Carolina, the kind of school it is?
Oh, I mean, it was a great experience. It had its highs and lows for sure. But my dream since I was a little kid was to be a D1 basketball player. So when I had the opportunity, I found out my senior year, I had a couple options to walk on places. So ECU was definitely the top of my list. And I just loved the culture. I went to a couple games there and I just thought it was an amazing atmosphere. When Minji's is rocking, I mean, it's really rocking. People don't get how great of a fan base we have. So that's really what, that and just the school in general is what made me want to go to ECU, and it was a great experience.
Yeah, you mentioned the atmosphere in Minji's, and we've talked, and I've mentioned it before on the podcast, that I'm a former president of the Minji's Maniacs, and I'll never forget, we were playing UTSA, University of Texas, San Antonio. It was my freshman year, your sophomore year, and I can't remember who the head coach was at the time for the Roadrunners, but he turns around, looks at the Minji's Maniacs, and he says, "Y'all are the most insane bunch of loonies in the conference." He said, "I hate coming here." And I don't know, that always kind of stuck with me. So can you tell me a little bit about like interacting with the Minji's Maniacs and seeing how crazy they are?
Yeah, I mean, one thing, like when the Minji Maniacs, when they showed up, I mean, so we went to so many different road games at tough environments, but nobody can top like the Minji Maniacs when the whole crowd's packed, everybody's just nuts and we're winning. I mean, that atmosphere, so I could think of like two that can compete was Duke when we played at Duke, I think probably your freshman year.
Yep.
And then San Diego State was pretty nuts as well. But other than that, I mean, nothing can compare. When Minji's at his top, like it's something it's a crazy experience.
Yeah, and with that, I mean, I've always wondered from a player's perspective, it's kind of stupid looking back at it now, but like when everybody's holding the papers up, most people are holding them upside down and everything, and then is it hard to keep your composure when after they announce every player coach from the opposing team, they just hold the paper down and say sucks?
Oh, it's awesome. That's exactly like as a player, like that's exactly what you want out of your fan base. Like, it's just hilarious. Like, I know we're not supposed to pay attention to it and laugh, but every time I would see that, like, I would just die inside. So, man, we loved, we definitely fed off it. I mean, you could tell too, like when Minji's, the Maniacs were like going crazy. I mean, we ended up playing better. I think there's definitely some correlation between the two. But yeah, man, the experience was great. No, definitely the best fan base in the conference by far.
Okay. Nice.
Now, I hear that.
I know, you know, historically ECU basketball has not been, you know, a top tier program, even a middle tier program. I know you were part of the team when they had their best run, winning that CIT championship. How would you describe, you know, especially with Joe Dooley coming in, and, you know, the team is 3-0 now, they're off to a great start. They have a you know, Jaden Gardner, who's, you know, good enough to be player of the year candidate. How would you describe the culture and what he's doing now to kind of build ECU basketball to be a respectable program?
Oh, I mean, I think he's doing a great job. Like you said, I mean, we're 3-0 for the first time, I think, since my sophomore year. So it's been around 7 years.
Yeah.
And as people don't understand, too, I mean, I think we've kind of realized this over the last couple of years of, like, moving into the American from Conference USA, like, the amount of – like, the difference in competition every night. So it's not going to just be a quick fix overnight to be able to jump into a conference with, like, the Cincinnati's. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I know UConn's gone, but, like, that's someone we had to compete with for 4 years. But I think Dooley is definitely the right guy to make it happen. I've been in a couple practices myself over the years, and I mean, he's the real deal. Super impressed. Everybody's buying in. And I think it helps him a lot now that he has his players, because like the first couple of years, you're dealing with somebody else's guys that may not fit your system. But now that he's got the whole roster, I think is his now. I think you've definitely been able to see that. The guys are buying in, and it helps too when you win. Like it's a lot easier to get the locker room around you. And hopefully I think this will be the turning point this year. So they look good. I mean, like you said, we got Garner, that guy can be the best player in the conference. And you couple that with a couple of good guards that they have, like Newton, I think he's pretty good. I think they'll definitely have a solid year.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring that up, because that was going to be my next question. Is I always like to ask the former players when they come on, especially with football and basketball, since there's been some turnover at the head coaching job in both those programs. Are you really involved? Are you ever able to come back and talk to those guys and kind of talk to them about their experience now playing for ECU and talk a little bit about your experience?
Yeah, I talked to them last year. I went to I worked a couple of camps in August of 2018. So like that beginning of that season, and went to a couple of practices. I go to usually like two or three games a year. So I'm not as involved now as I was, I guess, 2 years ago when I had some teammates that were still there, or like an assistant coach here or there. And then now with COVID, I mean, I don't think I'll talk to them at all or see them this year. But yeah, I try to stay involved as much as possible, just to keep up with everybody.
Got you. Now, looking back, if there was one thing that you wanted to do or could have done in your playing career, what would it be?
Already asking the hard questions.
Yeah. Like personally, I would like to have maybe played more in my junior and senior year. That was the goal going in there as a preferred walk-on. But I knew that would be tough. And definitely the transition from like Conference USA, like the recruits that we were getting and the transfers that we were getting to compete at an American Conference level, I just knew that was way above my head. But then another thing that I'd want, like there's a couple times where we'd be close to like winning against a UNC or a Duke. So I think if I could have changed anything other than making like the NCAA tournament would have been awesome, but beating one of those blue bloods at their place would have been like, to me, like if we would have beat Duke my sophomore year, and if we would have won that game, if we would have won that game, we would have gone to Madison Square Garden for two games. So most people didn't even know that because they didn't think we'd win. But that game was a play-in game to go to the Madison Square Garden for two games, which I thought that would have been, like, to me, cooler than a NCAA tournament to beat Duke and then go to play in the Garden for two games.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
I think that would have been up there.
Yeah, I mean, everybody talks about ECU basketball, and I was always like, yeah, well, I mean, we lost to Duke by 9 one time. So, I mean, that was – I mean, I remember – I mean, that was – freshman year and being really excited about that. And I mean, coming off the CIT championship. Now you played with some interesting characters on that ECU basketball squad. We've had one of them on the podcast, Akeem Richmond. And we hope to have Mike Zangari, your friend on the podcast soon. Tell me a little bit about some of the different guys that you were able to play with, and maybe somebody that stood out as kind of the jokester on the team, or just kind of stood out personally to you?
Well, a lot of them stood out in different ways to me. I mean, I'm pretty close. Definitely the two guys you mentioned, like Akeem. I still keep up with him a lot. He's in Raleigh with me. But I'd say, like, basketball-wise, probably the person that stood out the most to me was Maurice Kemp.
Okay.
That was a guy, I think, that was a CIT year, was a senior year. He was a special player, just a stud. And I loved Akeem Richmond. That guy was like, and he'll tell you, we call him the microwave, because you can just throw that guy in the game and he can just get 15 points in like 2 minutes, hit five threes. Like, I've never seen a more exciting player. Like, you can just throw him in and he could just win yourself a game by himself, which was, and he's just a hilarious dude in general. I mean, that guy is just – he's a character.
Yeah, I think when he came on the podcast, I think he said – he was like, yeah, I still think I'm one of the best shooters in the world.
Dude, the thing is, I never – like, I would be – we had a play where he'd just run down the baseline and we'd set, like, a double screen and he'd just shoot it in the corner. So, like, naturally, on the bench, I'm, like, right in front of him. And I kid you not, the guy would just catch it and jump and turn in the air and shoot it, and I think he's going to make it every time. Like, the amount of games that we'd be down by like 9 with like 3 minutes left. And I'm like, we can win because of Keem. Yeah. Like, he might not be like the best player that I played with there, but like the most, like, I can just take over a game at any time. Like,
yeah.
Every time he shoots it, I'm like, it's going in for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And it did most of the time.
And I feel like in our interview, we asked him who his favorite shooter of all time was, and he said himself.
Yeah, so,
no, that's what, and the thing is, to be able to be that type of player, like, you got to have that confidence.
Exactly.
Like, I really think at that time, like his senior year, he was a top 10 shooter in the world. Like, he,
oh, yeah.
And like just straight shooting, like, he had to be. I mean, he made 158 threes or something like that. And
absurd.
Like, the shots he takes are terrible, and he still makes them at like a high clip. So people don't get it. Like, I'm like, he's not just playing against a zone and lighting up. He's taking like turnarounds from 25 feet, like contested, yeah. And he's still making it like 40%.
And I mean, I think he made it to the finals in the, like, the 3-point contest that one
yeah,
year.
Yeah, he got like, he had the opportunity to go there like the couple games before the Final Four.
Yeah.
Like, 3-point shooting contest. He didn't do as well as he wanted to, but when you put him in the game, it's different. He's a – it's funny, too, because, like, going back to that, like, when I got there as a freshman, he was a transfer. So, like, that was the first year he was able to play. So, yeah. Like, I'm just, like, listening to these guys at lunch and, like, in workouts, like, because I don't know who's good yet because I haven't played with them much. Mm. And then Akeem would always just be, like, the most confident guy there. He would, like, he wasn't in the starting lineup. Like, they have him, like, between second and third string, like, on the board. Like, they list us, like – positions and what, I guess, if you're the second string, third string, first string, and he'd be like second string. So I'm like, this guy like talks a lot to be on the second string the whole time. And then I like one pickup game, he hit like 15 threes. And I'm like, that's why he talks a lot. Like, it makes sense to me now.
He can back it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, another guy that kind of, while we're on the same subject, another guy that doesn't really strike me as lacking confidence and is, has those, He has that resume to back it up, is B.J. Tyson. I mean, another one of those guys that, I mean, he kind of came in and filled those shoes after, I think he had 1 year with Akeem, but he kind of came in and filled those shoes after Akeem graduated and moved on. Can you tell me a little bit about Bunny?
Yeah, he's a killer, man. And I know when he came in as a freshman, had to do a gray shirt where he had to sit out a year. And his confidence is like, I mean, it was all there from day one. He didn't care. He's trying to go kill everybody. You could just tell, like, right away, you either have it or you don't with that killer instinct. And that dude has it. I mean, he had it all. He's averaged, I think, like 13 or 14 in year one. Mm-hmm. When I would be like, if you can score 6 in year one in the American as a guard, that's really good. And he over doubled it. So I didn't think in practice that he would – some people just, like, can play and practice really well. But then sometimes, like, the lights are on. Like, B.J. Tyson's one of those guys, like, he just kicks it up a gear.
Yeah.
Like, if he doesn't play great in practice one day, it doesn't matter, because the second the camera's rolling, like, he's a different guy. And that was B.J. And you could just tell the confidence just, like, pours out of his body. So – and it can, you can look at his career, and he probably scored, like, 1,500 points or something crazy. So, yeah, I mean, he just constantly had a – good year every single year is there.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Now what was it like playing for Coach Lebo? I know he was, you know, the winningest coach in ECU men's basketball history, but he had his ups and downs, and I always like asking former players that. What was it like playing for Lebo?
I like Lebo a lot. I thought he was, like, X's and O's wise, I thought he was a genius. I think his timing of being a coach was a weird spot where, like, he went from not winning when he got there to winning, so everybody's expectations went.
I mean, yeah.
As they should, definitely with a fan base like ECU, how passionate everybody is. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just win 24 games and then expect to win 11 2 years later and everybody be happy.
Right.
So I think the timing of, like, changing conferences kind of was bad for him. Because, I mean, you have high expectations, you win 24 games, and then you get thrown in, and instead of playing UTSA – like you mentioned, I mean, you're going on the road against Connecticut. I mean, you're going on the road against Cincinnati. And then at SMU at the time, I mean, they're top 10. So you just, like, every single game was so different. I think it takes a couple of years to be able to recruit at that level and, like, to be able to compete. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're seeing it with a bunch of sports. I mean, across EC, like, it's tough. It takes, like, I think this is the year and next year where we'll, like, be able to compete again at the level that we want to. Like, football is doing great now at the end of the year. But I think Lebo's, like, position of when he came in, he had success right away, and then going into the American kind of, I guess, I mean, it messes with you. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. That's the lows for sure. Like, people get antsy.
Yeah, and I mean that's something that we've tried to kind of keep in check here on the Boneyard podcast is reminding people, hey, like we came into this conference and we weren't at all – I don't feel like we were prepared to compete in this conference.
It's a true basketball conference.
And I mean, I think it's a true – I mean, it's a true athletics conference. I mean, you look at – you got three teams that should be ranked in football. You have four or five teams that are consistently ranked in basketball. You got two or three teams consistently ranked in baseball. I mean, you look at the big three sports, and I mean, the American, it's up there with the quote unquote Power Five conferences.
Yeah.
And they may not have the funding, which hurts them, but I mean, still to this day, I still think that the American competitiveness wise is up there. And now I want to kind of ask you, already asked the question about like what you wish you could have done in your time at ECU. I want to ask you, what was the most proud moment of your time at ECU?
Ooh, had a lot of them. I'd say like going back to my freshman year, I know we're going to talk about the CIT, but like walking in the airport at like 4 a.m. or whenever we got back, and like the airport at Greenville was just like loaded with ECU fans, probably like 500 people waiting on us to get there.
Wow.
And that's when I realized, I was like, I mean, I don't think I'm going to get up at 3 a.m. to go see anybody. And the fact that like 500 people were out there to watch us, I thought that was a really cool moment where I was like, all right, this is a big deal. Like,
that's awesome.
Being a part of the team is really cool.
And along those lines with your time at ECU, I want to know, how is your time? This is a question I like to ask all former athletes. How has your time at ECU prepared you for the life you lead outside of college and after college?
Yeah, I mean, I thought I was perfectly prepared for my transition from my college athletics days and just college in general to the workplace. I mean, I know being an athlete, like we're up early every morning. We have to do so much stuff throughout the day. So there's just so many qualities, like just work ethic and time management and being able to work in teams, which I know is huge in a workplace for me now. I think all of that that I gained from ECU just really help me be prepared right away once my days were over. So it's been definitely been a smooth transition. And I think my athletic background and then my background at ECU in general just made it very smooth.
That's great to hear. And now I want to go back to basketball real quick. We'll wrap up here in a minute, but I want to go back to basketball. You played 19 minutes in your career. I know you said you wish you could have played your junior and senior season more, but I believe it was your junior season, maybe it was your senior season. I can't remember who we were playing. I want to say, was it the Virginia University of Lawrenceville or something like that? I don't know. Some small town school. And then all of a sudden the crowd just erupts into "We want Peyton chance." And I remember because, I mean, like I said, I was in the Minji's Maniacs, and Levo was looking at us, and we were just like looking at him, staring him down like, "We want Peyton. We want Peyton." And you got in the game. What was that moment like when you heard the whole stadium chanting your name, saying they want you on the court?
I mean, it's a funny experience. Like, it's really cool at the same time. I love when it happens. Not for much for me hearing it, just so I can look at Lebo and see, like, damn it, I'm going to have to put him in. Like, he can't let everybody down. So, no, it was a really cool experience. But I thought it was just hilarious the whole time. And I know, too, like, when the games are close, I mean, like, a blowout at the end, and I see, like, the three-minute mark, I'm just like, all right, like, is it now? Like,
about to get in,
start chaining. I mean, that's when I was like, all right, well, cool. At least I'll get in the game at some point today because of y'all. So I appreciate those 19 minutes might have been a little less if it wasn't for y'all.
Yeah, I just remember, like, and I believe you came in, like, you came in and you were hot. Like, you had a steal. I think you had a block or something like that. Like, I mean.
It's all a blur. When I would go in there, I don't even know what happens. Like, I look at the stat sheet later. Because I don't remember anything. Definitely, like, the games where I'd get my name chanted. I'm like, all right, whatever happened with court, I don't even remember anymore. It's just like a quick little flash.
But that's great. And, that, I mean, I was thinking about that when Arnie and I were talking about who we wanted to have on the podcast, because we try to keep it kind of topical with the season. And with it just being the start of basketball season, we wanted to have you on. You're our second ECU basketball player that we've had on.
Yeah.
The first was Akeem. So now, I mean, we've got you, and we're happy to have you. Now, I'm going to ask you probably the hardest question we're going to ask the whole podcast.
The hardest.
Sure.
This is, have you listened to a Boneyard podcast yet? Probably not.
Not yet, but I will.
Okay.
Now.
Okay. So this is the hardest question we ask all of our guests, especially the ones that are affiliated with ECU in some way. This is the question, okay?
Yep.
So after you hear your name chanted, you decide, okay, you want to keep riding that high. You go downtown for a little bit, maybe have some drinks. I don't know. I'll let you keep that to yourself. But then you decide to end the night at a little restaurant,
little known establishment
called Sup Dogs. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to know, Peyton, you got to be honest with me. What's your order at Sup Dogs?
Two cheeseburgers,
two cheeseburgers,
hot dog.
Wow.
And some fries.
Man, this guy's cardboard.
I know. I mean,
some fries.
Yeah.
Are we putting anything on the fries?
Do what?
Are we putting anything on the fries? Any bacon?
Cheese on the fries.
Okay.
If I'm cheese on special, fries. Yeah. Depends.
Oh, man.
Depends on how intoxicated I am or not.
And where are you going? Like, if you were to go downtown, where would you end up at?
Man, like everywhere. It would just depend on who I'm going with. Like if I'm going with teammates or if I'm going with like athletes from another sport or to some of my friends outside. So like I would go everywhere equally. I'd say like, so teammates would probably go to Still Life. We go to like, I go to 519 with some of my other friends.
There we go.
There we go.
Our PBs, which is that even, are they there still?
Yeah, yeah, Bob's is still there. Yeah.
Okay. So PBs and then, gosh, what's the one? Is it 4th Street?
It's something else. 4th Street. There was a 4th Street bar, but I think that's something else now.
I know. Yeah. The ones like on the corner have like changed a little bit since I've been there. Yeah. But yeah, I'd say 519 Bob's and then like Still Life on occasion. I try to stay away from there. But yeah,
that place is deadly. And there's some creatures.
Yeah. Like you every time. Yeah. You take a year off your life every time you walk in that door. But it's worth it.
I mean,
some good times.
There were some fun nights drinking at Still Life that we had.
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely freshman, sophomore year. That was those were some crazy times there.
I bet so. And we'll have to have you on again.
Absolutely.
As we go forward and continue with this podcast, I want to get something where we get you and some of the other guys on there and kind of get like a round table. And we're gonna have another ECU basketball player
maybe
on
get
next
that,
weekend.
Get that CIT championship team. Get them all.
I can make it happen. I'll make it happen.
Like a almost like an ESPN 30 for 30 type thing.
Man, that'd be awesome.
We'll get the gang back together and shoot the shit. How's that sound?
Sounds good, man. Just let me know. I'll reach out to some people. We'll get the gang back.
Maybe after COVID, we'll do that, and maybe we'll be able to do something in person and really start to let the drinks flow and tell the stories of that trip. All right?
Yeah. All right, man.
All right, Peyton. Well, thank you for joining us on the Boneyard Podcast. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. We really do appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. It was a fun time.
Yeah, man. Well, we'll talk to you soon. We'll get something worked out with the CIT championship team.
Yeah, okay? Let's do it. All right, guys. Y'all take care.
All right. Absolutely. Thanks, man. You too. Interview with ECU basketball legend, certified sixth man coming off the bench, one of our now good friends of the podcast, Peyton Robbins. I had a blast talking to him. Artie, what was your thoughts?
Yeah, that was awesome. I think that was a really good interview. I'm really looking forward to being able to get the round table together.
We're going to have to do that.
We got to get the round table
together.
We're
going to talk into
that CIT championship. That would be awesome to get all those guys and just kind of pick their brains and see how they're doing nowadays.
Hell yeah.
Like, definitely got to get that in the works.
Yeah, that would be a fun time. Hear some of those stories.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, I mean, Jeff Lebo, he's coaching at my cousin's alma mater, her high school. maybe I can figure out how to get Lebo up and on the podcast too. I'd be happy to talk to him.
Yeah.
I mean, Lebo, everybody gives him shit, but to me, Lebo, yeah, he had a rough go at it. But he did the honorable thing. He didn't do it like Scotty Montgomery. He didn't do it like Cecil Staton.
Right.
He didn't do it like Jeff Comfort, where it was one of those, all right, give me some more money and then I'll leave.
And then I'll leave. Exactly.
He took the high road. He said, yeah, I know I didn't perform. I'm going to go ahead and pack my bags. I'm going to go live with my wife down in Morehead City and then call it a day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be, Jeff, if you're listening, feel free. Come on the pod. I tried to find your email. Hey, I'm down to have you anytime. Jeff Lebo, if you want to come on, we'll talk ECU basketball, talk about your time here, talk about your time at Auburn, and all of that. I think that would be a great time. I mean, hell, the guy played with MJ. I mean, I'm sure we could get some fun stories out of him about MJ, right? Maybe, I don't know. But Artie, you want to do something that is kind of wild, mm-hmm. considering football just ended last year,
mm-hmm.
or last week. Man, way 2020's gone. It feels like a week is a year.
That's true.
It's wild. It's fast but slow at the same time. It's weird. Artie, let's do this thing. We talked about it last week.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about making it go in a couple of weeks, but we're gonna go ahead and put this out there. We're gonna do our way too early predictions
for ECU football.
So Artie, let's break it down. The first game we got a game against App State.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a Thursday night game in Charlotte, in
Bank of America Stadium. This is one that people have had circled for a few years now.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, going to really, you know, App State fans and students have been talking a lot of trash. ECU fans and students have been talking a lot of trash. You know, come September 2nd, you know, of next year, we're really going to see, you know, which team is ready, which teams have arrived. Look, App State is going to be good. They're always good. But they do play in the Sun Belt Conference. You know, we play in the American. I'd like to say the American's more big boy than the Sun Belt. But App State is going to be legit. They're going to be good. They have a good coach. And they don't like us. So they're going to be ready to play. I think that game's winnable, though.
I think
based off of how we ended this year, and based off of how we look in the offseason, I think Thursday night game against an in-state rival, I got to win.
Especially after the type of season that ECU football had. I mean, for the next 269 days, mm-hmm. ECU is going to be gearing up for App State.
For App State, yep.
They're thinking about it. They got a bad taste in their mouth after some of the things that went down this year. I mean, I was looking at it. I was watching the Navy-Tulsa game last night, cussing under my breath, watching that game, saying we should have beat both those teams.
And App's going to be favored. Let's not get it twisted. App is going to be favored going into that matchup.
They are. But, I mean, ECU got they did exactly what they needed to do to prepare for next year.
Mm-hmm.
If we can have a full offseason and have Coach Houston really have like a full training camp and really get these guys in check.
Yeah.
It's gonna be something watching our boys take the field in Bank of America. I'm ready to go to that game already. I'm
pumped for that now. As soon as tickets go on sale,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, maybe
depending. Maybe we might be able to get some media passes to the game. That'd be even better.
Yeah. So but yeah, I'm super excited about that game. 269 days away from now, ECU, App State, in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Start of a 3-game series against the Mountaineers. It's going to be big time for the Pirates, and I do think that's a winnable game. So, Artie, just real quick, do you have a prediction for the game? You don't have to give me score, but do you think ECU wins or?
I think. Based off of how we ended, and I can only base this off of how we ended. I'm not going to look on, you know, the whole season in totality. I think it's a win. I think it's a close game. I think App State scores early, but I think we stay with them. I think in the end, we win that game, and we set ourselves up with a lot of confidence riding a 3-game winning streak based off of last year, going into next year, going into South Carolina with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that ECU wins that game. That's one of the games. That's probably the game that honestly, like in the first four, that makes me nervous.
Yes,
that App State game. just because I know what's riding on that. I feel like there's a rivalry brewing between the two schools.
Well, to me, it's already a rival. I know we haven't played much, but you know, App State and ECU. I mean, they're two opposite spectrums of the state.
All I'm going to say is App State without ECU, there's no App State.
They don't like each other. You know,
just remember that App State without ECU, there is no App State. So just all I'm saying, just remember it.
Because if you really think about it, I mean, outside of Duke, Carolina, and State, you know, those are your top three in the state of North Carolina. It's between App State and ECU fighting for fourth, right? And so I think that's where the rivalry comes from. Like ECU is like, no, we're the fourth biggest in the state. App State's like, no, we're the fourth biggest in the state outside of those big three.
And if an App State fan tells me that, I'll look at them and I'll say, you've been smoking too much dope. But then, all right, so we both have ECU 1-0 after week one against App State. That'll be a fun Thursday night game that ECU will play against the Mountaineers. Well, then you get the Gamecocks coming into Dowdy. Well, I'm not going to hold my breath to say, yeah, they're coming. We've seen them dodge us before.
Right.
We've seen them dodge us on the road trip. I wouldn't be surprised if it happens again.
They're a lot like that team in Blacksburg when it comes to not wanting to play us.
Don't give me – I don't want to talk about the team in Blacksburg, those frauds. The Gamecocks, oh, man, there's a lot of turmoil going on in that program.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just fired Will Muschamp, just hired Shane Beamer. He coached with Coach Ruffin McNeil at Oklahoma. I mean, his dad, longtime Oklahoma coach. That's an SEC game. That's one of those games that I think, it's an SEC game, but
right.
That you're talking about an SEC East team that doesn't really do much and, I mean, hasn't ever really been able to fully put it together since Lattimore.
Yeah.
That season with Marshawn Lattimore back in, 2011?
Mm-hmm.
So, South Carolina, I think ECU wins that game. And I don't think if it's in Dowdy, if it's in Dowdy and there's no COVID restrictions, we have a packed house. That game's going to be loud.
That's going to be the most packed game we have all year because we have South Carolina coming to town.
And there's going to be fans from both sides there. It's going to be rowdy. It's going to be loud. People don't think about it enough, but that's a smaller regional rivalry that has happened.
Mm-hmm.
In the past where you've seen these two teams put up some pretty good games.
It's not like we haven't beat South Carolina before.
Yeah, no.
beaten them before.
We're not scared of you. I mean, you're an SEC team, but we're not scared of you. Back in the day, we used to think that we deserved your spot in the SEC. I mean, 5-6 years ago, I was saying, hell, get rid of South Carolina, put us in there. Now,
I think South Carolina remains respectable. We're going to talk about taking somebody out, take Vandy out. All right, Vandy's not respectable in
Kentucky,
SEC football. All right?
Missouri.
Honestly, Tennessee hasn't been respectable in the last 8 years in SEC football. So, I still think South Carolina's respectable. But speaking on this game, this is the best chance we've got to beat an SEC opponent in the last few years because South Carolina's going to be down. They're going to be a bottom of the barrel team in the SEC next year. They might win 6 games. Maybe.
They don't win 6 games next year.
Maybe. And that's a best case scenario that South Carolina wins 6 games next year.
No shot.
I think they win 4 or 5, to be honest with you.
I think South Carolina is where ECU was 2.5 years ago. They're there now.
Right.
They're Scotty and Will Muschamp. That was the thing with Will Muschamp. He would win a game that he shouldn't win. And they would say, oh, well, we got to keep him now. Scotty Montgomery did the same thing. He beat Carolina. He beat State. Everybody's like, oh, great. Now we got to keep him again.
Right.
Well, Will Muschamp finally got the axe. He was told, pack your bags, get out of here.
I don't know what that was. I just got stuff falling in my apartment.
Oh, it's the ghost of Will Muschamp's job.
Not too happy.
But, South Carolina, I think that's a winnable game, especially if it's in Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium.
If it's in Dowdy, yes. I absolutely think we can win that game. But, look, they're still going to have 4- and 5-star kids. It's not like South Carolina's going to suck. They're not going to come off the bus and look like they're, you know, they're going to pass the eye test. So, I mean, we still have work to do against South Carolina. But I definitely think we can win that game.
Now, that's going to be a... That's on Saturday, September 11th. Maybe we'll get John down there, have a fun tailgate, and then go to the press box. Hopefully, it'll be like a 7 p.m. game, and we'll be able to really roll with that one.
Yep.
So then the following week, Artie, I'd be interested in going to this game.
I'd be very interested.
Yeah. I don't really like West Virginia, but I'd be down to go up to West Virginia and see the Thundering Herd in John C. Edwards Stadium. And honestly, this is a game that I think that you want to talk about. Marshall got screwed out of not having College Game Day. I mean,
yes, they did.
They got screwed out of not having College Game Day, especially.
I mean, are you kidding me?
You go to the Masters.
You go to the Masters, which has nothing to do with college football. But I get it. It's the Masters. Cool.
The Masters. That's an inside joke between Artie and some friends of us.
Hopefully, John is listening to the podcast.
Yeah, probably not. But yeah, I would love to go up there, pay our respects.
Mm-hmm.
That's a game that we wish we would have had this year.
Right.
But I think that would be fun. I think we saw Marshall kind of have a rough go at it yesterday.
Yeah, they had a blunder. I'll get into that a little later.
They looked human.
Mm-hmm.
I the whole season I didn't think that really any Conference USA team really deserved to be ranked. Just knowing the Conference USA schedule,
right?
But I get why. I mean, you have an undefeated team. Hey, look, they're ranked.
You have an undefeated team. They got to be up there.
Just like Coastal Carolina, they're undefeated, but they play in the Sun Belt. But then you have Louisiana Lafayette also ranked, which is never mind. But yeah, I think that Marshall, I think that's a winnable game, but that's going to be a close game. Those first three games are going to be tough. They're going to be close. You don't have any pay me games on the schedule. Those first three games, those are games that are okay. These are going to have the blood boiling and punch you in the mouth type atmospheres. I mean, Marshall, we say it all the time. It's a rivalry built out of love, out of respect, but it's still a rivalry nonetheless.
I'll go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, just to finish that thought, I believe that ECU's ultimate rival is Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that looking at it outside of NC State, ECU's rival is Marshall.
But that is a gentleman's rivalry, like you said. It's, you know, we don't like NC State.
I hate
we
NC
don't
State.
Like Carolina. You know, we don't like App. We respect Marshall. We like Marshall.
You know,
we still like beating them, but there's a mutual respect there.
Yeah, I don't like UCF either.
Yeah, well, that's not really a rivalry yet. We gotta get some more dubs against them.
In the past, it has been, but I think that's it's a winnable game. But I also think that there's going to be a lot of emotion since you couldn't have the 50-year anniversary game.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe there'll be something done between the two programs at that point, if COVID is done. I know we've got a vaccine hopefully on the way, so hopefully we'll be able to kind of have no restrictions there, and go out to Huntington, West Virginia, and maybe we'll have a friend of the podcast, Bryce Williams, on the podcast again to break down that game. Since I mean, he is an alum of ECU, but he also played at West Virginia or at Marshall. That'd be fun to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
But Artie, the next week, can we go ahead and chalk this one up?
We don't need to talk much about Charleston.
I don't know anything about Charleston.
I don't know anything about him, but we shouldn't lose to him. That's all I know.
What conference are they in?
I don't know.
Okay. But so the conference games are set for next year, Artie. We don't have dates next to them.
Right, so this is not in correct order.
This isn't just any particular order. Right. This is just how FBS schedules has them listed out.
Okay.
Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that we could honestly, I think we'll be 3-1 going into Cincinnati if that is our fifth game of the season. But yeah. I think sitting at it, we could be 3-1 heading into that Cincinnati game. But to me, it depends on Luke Fickell. Does he come back?
Yeah, he's coming back.
And if he comes back, I got to be honest with you, we're not there yet. We're not on Cincinnati's level yet. I think we can keep it competitive, a whole lot more competitive than what we did this year.
Oh, yeah.
But are we there yet? No, we're not ready to beat the Cincinnati's of the world yet.
Yeah, I agree with you. Now, Cincinnati might lose some guys to the draft this year, much like I talked about Blake Prohl earlier in the podcast with him going ahead and declaring. Those guys that are on these top 25 programs, They're not going to try to waste another year in college. They're going to go ahead and go to the draft. So I could see some of those guys, some of the Desmond Ridders of the world,
mm-hmm.
going into the draft and say, okay, I'm here, draft me, let's do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're there.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're having some kind of turnover in your program. It's the programs like Alabama, your Notre Dames, your Clemsons,
mm-hmm.
that can continue to recruit at that high level and continue to have impact teams, high octane teams,
mm-hmm.
throughout the years. That's how you have a good program. That's how you build a good program. And I mean, that's how UCF's done it. They've been able to, they had one good year. Now they're able to recruit, right? Yep. And we need more of that in the conference. And I think it's coming for ECU. I think their time's coming, but Cincinnati, they're going to be a good team next year. That I don't see ECU beating them, but I do think that it is closer, like you said,
yeah,
than it was this year. And it was close last year. I mean,
right.
So who knows? Temple, I think Temple's a winnable game.
Temple's absolutely a winnable game.
Their quarterback, Michael Russo, or I think his name's Michael Russo. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Russo, their quarterback, just transferred out. He's gone. See ya. I don't know where you're going, but peace out, dude. They had a fifth string quarterback against us a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling a lot of those guys are going to be transferring out. I don't know how they feel with.
You don't think they stay?
I don't think there's a lot of. From an outsider's perspective, it seems like the team at Temple is just kind of. They're just kind of there,
mm-hmm.
and that roster just doesn't. They don't seem energized at all by that program,
right?
And Temple had a couple good years, and I don't think I think they're done.
And we talked about this in an interview a couple weeks ago when we played Temple. They got to get out of that stadium. I really think they don't have any juice when they play in that stadium. Nobody comes to see them. It's just parents there. I mean, it even in COVID, their attendance looked normal. So to me, it's like, to really be able to build that program and to get kids to buy in, they got to really get out of that stadium and kind of have a true home field atmosphere and experience. But, you know, this year they were riddled with injuries. They had the whole COVID thing go on with them. They're going to be a lot better next year. I still don't think that's much of an improvement, though. I agree with you. I think we beat Temple. But they will be better than what we saw this year.
I agree. So right now we're through five games, and you and I both have ECU as 3-2,
yeah,
4-1-ish.
Yeah, that's where we should be sitting.
Yeah. And so then looking at the next game on FBS schedules, Tulane.
That's a tough one.
They just lost their offensive coordinator.
Because Tulane has looked good the last few years, though.
Yep.
And they're a team that's always, I mean, they win, I think they've won six games at least for the last 5 or 6 years.
No, because I think they've only had like five winning seasons since 2000.
Okay,
year 2000.
Okay, that might be somebody else I'm thinking about.
They didn't have a winning season in 2019, and they had a winning season in 2018, I believe.
But I do know this year, so Tulane has played everyone tough.
Yeah.
Everyone they've played, they've played them tough.
They're one of those teams that they may not get it done week in and week out, but they do play you tough. They may not get the win on the scoreboard, but they play you tough. You know you play Tulane every single week.
And if I had to give my honest opinion, I mean, to me, this is going to be a game of two evenly matched teams trying to establish themselves, right? Trying to establish themselves in a conference is going to be pretty good. So it's a toss-up game to me. I don't really know how to predict it just yet. We could win, we could lose. So that's kind of how I'm looking at the Tulane game right now.
Yeah, I think they have this game. This game's actually in Greenville.
Yeah, I was about to say, it will be in Dowdy, though.
Which, I mean, Tulane came into Dowdy a couple weeks ago, about a month ago. And, I mean, they put a hurting on the boys.
Mm-hmm.
That was a game that I thought going into the season that ECU should win.
Yep.
They didn't. But I think that next year that might be a different. Once again, I think Coach Houston will finally get his team playing exactly how he wants them to play all four quarters every game.
Yep.
I think We saw that later on in the year after the first couple of games when I think some of the players got their ass chewed out.
Yeah.
And now they've kind of taken that step, and they know the type of culture that they want in this program.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Bulls, the South Florida Bulls, give me that.
Yeah, that's another dub. That's a team still trying to find themselves, trying to find their identity. Yeah, that should be a dub.
Yeah, give me that. So right now through, what's that, 8 games?
Mm-hmm.
So you have Tulane as a win, or is that a toss-up?
Right now, I'm going to say that's an L.
Okay.
I'm going to call that an L.
Okay. So you've got ECU being 4-3.
4-3.
Through Tulane.
Yeah.
Okay, I think Tulane's a winnable game. If it's a winnable game to me, I'm calling it a dub.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think that Coach Houston has, he kind of has that passion behind him, and mm-hmm. the team has bought into him. And
right,
I mean, even some of these guys that are signing next month in December, they've been tweeting, they've been posting, they've been messaging us,
mm-hmm.
saying, "Yeah, we're locked in, we're ready to go." So I'm gonna say that. The culture is being built. The foundation's there.
Right.
They just got to execute on it next year, and I think they will. And I think Tulane will see that. So I've got ECU still at 5-2.
Okay.
After Tulane.
Okay.
Looking at the schedule we have, that once again this isn't in order.
Right.
But looking at the schedule we have, I think ECU is at least 5-2, at this point in ours, and USF we both have.
That's a dub. Yeah.
So I have it 6-2. You have 6-4.
No.
Wait.
5-3.
Math is hard.
Yeah.
sorry.
5-3 going into what could be Houston.
Yeah, and Houston, you have a coach Mike Houston going to coach his ECU team at TD ECU Stadium in Houston.
Touchdown ECU. That's what it stands for me.
Yeah, that's what I read it as. man, I really want to call this a win, but I just can't do it. I can't pull the trigger.
Yeah, at Houston is a big factor for me, and I think they're going to have a bounce back year. Houston's never really terrible.
No, yeah.
And this year they were kind of bad, and I think this is going to be the worst year they have in a long time. So, yeah, I'm with you. I want to call that a win. I think we'll be 5-4 leaving Houston, okay. If I have to be honest with you.
Okay, yeah. So I've got a 6-3
okay.
leaving Houston. I think that's an L. Next year will be Dana Holgorsen's show me year.
Mm-hmm.
I really think if he doesn't have a Cincinnati or a UCF type season,
yeah,
he might be getting the boot next year.
Mm-hmm.
Houston has that kind of money. They can spend that kind of money, and if they want to cut him, sayonara, we'll get somebody else.
You're right.
Memphis at the Liberty Bowl. Artie, this is another game we should look into going to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Going to Memphis.
Memphis is just a good time in general.
Go down to Beale Street.
Mm-hmm.
Put on my blue suede shoes and I boarded the plane.
I ain't mad at you.
Hey. There we go. Memphis reminds me a lot of Navy. They kind of have that up and down program.
Mm-hmm.
They're a team that can never seem to really put it all together.
Right.
I think ECU can beat Memphis. I think Memphis is starting kind of a downturn
mm-hmm.
in their program. We're seeing it a little bit in basketball this year.
Had a lot of turnover too in their coaches.
Yeah, so. And it's part of being in the American Athletic Conference.
Yeah.
I think ECU beats Memphis. I'm just going to say that. I think ECU beats Memphis.
I agree with you. I don't really care what Memphis looks like next year. I think that's a game that we get up for, especially after, you know, looking at it right now, if we're coming off a loss to Houston, we're sitting at 5-4, I really think that Memphis game is a game that we get up for, and we win. I think we go to 6-4 after beating Memphis.
Yeah, so I've got us at, 6-3? I think we beat Memphis, and
you got 7-3.
I got 7-3 right now.
That's an excellent year. You got brewing next year.
Yeah,
7-3 is pretty damn good.
Now, and I honestly think, looking at the last two games on the schedule here, and guys, y'all know me. I am a homer.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in our ECU Pirates. I believe in Coach Houston. I believe in Hole Nailers. I believe in our running back room.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in what we're doing on the recruiting side. I mean, we're looking at some JUCO guys. I was looking at one guy, 6'5", 325 pounds. I'm like, that's what we need.
Yeah.
That's what we need. If we can get that, I'll be comfortable with this with my predictions right now. Navy, I think we should have won that game this year.
Right.
We have Coach Houston back. We have Coach Blake Harrell back. Once again, they both understand the triple option better than almost anybody in the conference,
right,
outside of Coach Ken. And who knows? Coach Ken, he might not be there next year.
Nah, I think he's coming back.
You think so?
I think he's coming back. Look, outside of Luke Fickell, to me, Coach Ken is the best coach in the American outside of Luke Fickell.
But I
got a lot of respect for him. I think he's excellent.
I've seen a lot of talk about Vanderbilt and Coach Ken.
I think he's got it better at Navy, man.
Yeah, he does, but that's what he does. He goes and builds programs.
You don't leave Navy to go to Vandy. Leave Navy to go to Tennessee. Leave Navy to go to South Carolina. Don't leave Navy to go to Vandy.
But Vandy is one of those schools that should be using the triple option.
Mm.
And they have the assets there already, and it's probably going to be a little bit easier to recruit at Vandy than it is at Navy. And I've got to believe that there is a pay raise going from Navy
to Vandy. Vanderbilt. Yeah, and historically, I mean, look, Vanderbilt's got money. That's old money. You know, that's old wealth. You know, yeah, we know the Vanderbilts.
They're literally the Vanderbilts.
Yeah, but and James Franklin, I mean, he was able to go to Vandy and build a respectable program. But even a respectable program at Vanderbilt is 7-5, 8-4. So I mean, we're not talking about a team that's gonna.
You're doing that right now in the American. You could go do that.
Well, he's got a few 10-win seasons, 10, 11-win seasons at Navy.
But I'm saying,
I don't think he'll ever be able to do that at Vanderbilt.
Imagine what he could do with the SEC recruiting.
Right.
And not having to say, hey, I'm going to recruit you to play football, but I'm also going to recruit you to go into the Navy after you graduate.
To me, he just feels like the kind of coach that he's going to be a lifer at Navy unless it's a sexy job. And Vanderbilt's not a sexy job to me.
I don't know. I think that I could see him there. I saw that there's a lot of reports. I know he's talking about it. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Coach Ken leave. And if so, Navy might not win a single game next year.
If Coach Ken leaves, I wouldn't say they go winless, but yeah, they're looking at 2 or 3 wins.
I mean, not knowing what their schedule wins is, I mean.
But regardless, a fully healthy East Carolina team with no restrictions, I think should win that game.
I mean, next year, Navy has Marshall, Air Force, Notre Dame, Army, of course.
Right.
Houston, Memphis, Cincy, ECU, SMU, UCF, Temple, and Tulsa. The only game on there that I really see is winnable if Coach Ken leaves.
Temple.
Is Temple. The only game.
Yeah.
If Coach Ken leaves, the only game that's winnable for Navy is Temple.
That's a rough schedule. I don't think Coach Ken leaves, but regardless, I think we're 7-4
but
going into UCF.
The other guy that I saw that was looking at the Vanderbilt job or could be in line for the Vanderbilt job,
mm-hmm,
is Coach Willie Fritz from Tulane.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's one of those two guys.
It's probably going to be gone.
And I got to think that Coach Ken has been loyal. He didn't leave Navy to go to BYU, but BYU is a different type of program, I mean, than Vanderbilt. I think that he can recruit at Vanderbilt the way he really wants to recruit, and really, he could get one of these guys that's a dual threat quarterback at Vanderbilt. He could get one of those guys that's a 4-star recruit to come to Vanderbilt because they know they're going to be on ESPN almost every single week.
He can, but in my opinion, it's going to take him so much longer to build that Vanderbilt program than it did the Navy program. It took him, what, 4 to 5 years to build that Navy program? Kids don't want to play for Vanderbilt, man, I'm telling you.
And kids want to go play for Navy?
I'd much rather play for Navy than Vanderbilt. Oh, my God, yes.
Knowing that you
I'd much rather go play for Coach Ken and serve 2 years. Go play for Vandy and just
at least at Vandy
ramrodded by Alabama 56-2 or, you know, play Auburn
get
and
get safety
beat by them. play Tennessee and get beat by a 4-5 Tennessee team. I mean, Vandy's just not good. They haven't been good in ever. They were decent under James Franklin.
I could see it.
And that's it. I'm just saying, it's not a sexy job.
He's in a good position right now.
It's not like he's in a bad spot. I mean, Navy's a good program. If he stays, they're going to continue to win 9, 10, 11 games a year.
Okay.
If I'm leaving Navy, I'm going to, like I said, a Tennessee, a South Carolina, who else is a big name program that could probably use a coach?
Well, South Carolina just took Shane Beamer.
You know, I'm not going to Vandy. That's all I know. But who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he goes to Vandy. Maybe he builds him into a powerhouse. I don't know.
You got to think about the schools that are going to hire somebody that's going to run the triple option. Most of your Power 5 schools outside of Georgia Tech aren't going to do that. And Navy's a better job than Georgia Tech.
Because to me, there's such a no. I'd rather have the Georgia Tech job than the Navy job. You can easily build a better program in the ACC with Georgia Tech in Atlanta than Vanderbilt in the SEC.
That's Nashville. You recruit Nashville, of all places, Nashville.
I think you can build a faster program at Georgia Tech than you can at Vandy. I really do, man. And you got to think of the conference. This is the ACC compared to the SEC. You have one stranglehold in the ACC. That's Clemson. That's the only stranglehold you got. You got Alabama. You've got Auburn. You've got Georgia. You've got who else? Florida.
But
you've got A&M.
But
are five teams that are going to kill you in recruiting. And then you've got all those other teams that follow behind it in the SEC that are going to be pretty damn good. Look at Mizzou. Mizzou's still trying to catch up with everybody after joining the SEC. Can't do it.
Yeah, Missouri belongs in the Big 12.
Like,
and even then, they really belong probably in
the
Mountain West.
I want Vandy to get better. I hope they get a coach that puts them in a good, you know, position. It's just, that's a headache job to me. Going to Vanderbilt is a headache.
I just don't see.
I don't know how we got so far off on
this. I don't know, but I think Vanderbilt's gonna hire one of those two. And they're going to offer him more money than Navy has.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're also, I mean, they're going to say, hey, like, you can bring anybody from your staff that you want to. We want to gut this program. We want you to rebuild it.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, you're going to be able to get SEC caliber recruits.
Look, regardless, who cares? ECU is going to be 7-4 after beating Navy.
Okay, yeah.
Heading into UCF. That was the original topic of discussion.
ECU's 8-3 after Navy. And then ECU plays at UCF.
Mm-hmm.
Mackenzie Milton less UCF.
Now, is Gabriel going to be back?
Oh, let's.
Because that's a huge factor. I mean, if Gabriel comes back, and look, I think UCF, I think they've lost. How many games have they lost this year? Three? I think they have three losses on the season.
They lost to Tulsa, who lost to ECU.
I'll say this. UCF is going to have a bounce back year. They're going to be in a running to play for another conference championship next year.
Gabriel's back. He's just a sophomore this year.
Yeah, Gabriel's going to be back. He's going to be better. That offense, they're still going to be putting up.
That's a top five offense.
They're going to be putting up 45 to 50 a week again next year. And if their defense gets any better, that's a tough game from ECU. Just much like Cincinnati, I don't think we're there yet to beat UCF. I don't think we're there yet. I think we can knock on the door, but I don't think the door is going to open.
These numbers are insane. His passer rating. Take a guess at what Dylan Gabriel's passer rating is.
96.
He is 156.9 last year and 162.9 this year.
He's got
year.
A 162 passer rating.
Yes.
Or is it passer rating or QBR?
Passer rating.
No, what's his QBR?
His QBR, his QBR is 79.7. That's 16th in the country already.
Okay.
He's second in touchdowns in the country with 30, and he's got over 3,300 yards for first in the country.
And he's only second behind a kid called Kyle Trask at Florida who's got like 40-something. So
yeah.
That offense is going to be explosive. But ECU is going to be 7-5. They're going to get to a bowl game.
8-4.
8-4,
yeah.
Come on, Jared.
Man. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, ECU is going to get to a bowl game for the first time in what feels like 20 years, eons and eons and eons.
ECU most definitely gets to a bowl game next year.
They most definitely get to a bowl game, yes.
If every game is ECU should have been going to a bowl game this year. At 5-4, they should have gone to a bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
I think Navy, Tulsa, those should have been wins. ECU should be going to a bowl game this year.
Okay.
Next year, I believe ECU is 8-4 next year with a chance to get to 9-4. If that's the case, ECU's back, baby.
Yeah, I got us at 7-5, which I think is a pretty respectable record to get us back on the right track of what we are used to seeing at ECU. Worst case scenario to me is 6-6. I think that's the worst case scenario we have for next year. Anything less than 6 wins, then you got to start questioning what the hell is going on. But I've got us at 7-5 confidently. Maybe even 8-4. I don't see 8-4. I think that's a stretch. But ECU most definitely makes a bowl game. And I think we win our bowl game.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
Don't know who we playing. I don't care. I think we win our bowl game.
Give me Buffalo. Some action. But, all right. So, I have 8-4. Artie's 7-5.
Mm-hmm.
Artie, we'll need to take that down and write that down somewhere where we can remember it.
Yeah.
Put a note in there to
our way too early predictions.
That way we can come back to it before the season starts and really listen to it. But Artie, let's do a walk the plank.
Yeah.
All right. I know you mentioned who yours was earlier.
Yeah.
You want to go ahead and indulge us?
Yeah. Sadly, I've been rooting for this team all year. They play in Conference USA, our former conference. You know, we talked about the rivalry. We talked about how much we respect this program. But Marshall, my God, how can you lay an egg and literally lay an egg 20-0 to Rice? I believe Rice is 2-3.
Yeah.
Their quarterback threw 5 interceptions in the game yesterday. They looked like a team that was not undefeated at all. They looked like a team with a losing record yesterday. I just don't know. I don't know what the hell happened. I don't know if you know players got food poisoning and sat out. I don't know if they just didn't care about the game, just couldn't get up for the game. But to lose 20-0 at home to a 2-3 Rice team, come on, Marshall. And you had the opportunity to kind of write your own destiny, win the Conference USA, get as high as maybe 15 or 16 in the country and go to a legit decent bowl game. And now all of a sudden you're going to be out of the top 25. And you should be out of the top 25 because you lost to Rice.
You got shut out by Rice.
and who knows what's going to happen at this point. But you're probably still going to win the Conference USA championship because Conference USA is not good. So, Marshall, walk the plank.
Yeah. That's a tough look, Marshall.
Yeah.
Also, real quick, before I go any further, I do want to give a shout-out. Jaquan McMillan, ECU, you know, he's tied for first in the conference with 4 interceptions,
mm-hmm.
and we only played 9 games.
We got ball hogs, baby. We got ball hogs.
So, give me that. Yeah. Now, my walk the plank, and I'm probably going to catch a little bit of flack for this one. I know I have from you, Artie.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't going to agree with me.
I don't like it, man. You should leave these two teams alone, man.
My thing is this BYU Coastal Carolina game that happened yesterday. It was a great game. Don't get me wrong. It was a phenomenal game. Came down to the last seconds. It was a good game. My thing is they both scrambled to get this game just to show off to the College Football Playoff Committee
that they deserve to have a chance, a legitimate chance.
But what I'm saying is, it was like the College Football Playoff Committee was going to look at it and be like, look, y'all are scrambling to do this. And I mean, we already don't believe that y'all are top 4 teams, but y'all are scrambling to get this game to have a top 25 opponent. That's my whole thing, is BYU and Coastal Carolina scrambled to get this game put together. This game, to me, wasn't really – like, it was interesting, but they still haven't really proven anything to me.
But from their perspective, what else were they supposed to do?
I get it. But they
BYU wanted Cincy. Since he backed out of that.
Yeah, because since he wants bigger and better things.
But they couldn't get it. You know what I mean?
Cincinnati, like, wants to take on...
like, at the end of the day, the playoff committee is not going to put Cincy in either. Probably not.
Cincinnati has everything to lose in a game against BYU or Coastal Carolina.
Because they're afraid to lose.
I don't think they're afraid to lose. But, I mean, it's one of those games where it's the same reason Alabama doesn't travel. It's the same reason.
If you are what you are, then anytime, any place, anywhere. That's the mindset, right? I truly believe Cincinnati is a top five team.
I do too.
We've said this.
I do too.
If you are what you are, anytime, any place,
but you don't anywhere. You don't pimp out your program trying to make a big name. What you do is you go after and you try to win reasonable ball games. BYU or Coastal Carolina got scheduled on like Thursday.
Yes.
Give me a break. Liberty was supposed to play Coastal Carolina. That was on the schedule. That should have happened.
And College Game Day was going to be there regardless.
Yeah. But for BYU and Coastal Carolina, it just went and proved that y'all aren't ready to hang with the big dogs.
How, though?
Like, it lacked professionalism. It lacked that big dog mentality.
Jared, what else are they supposed to do, man? What else are these small name programs supposed to do to get their name out there? Just take what they're given and say, all right, well, whatever. We're just a small name program. We'll go 12-0. We'll go play in the damn, you know, Dollar General Bowl and just take our money and be happy. Like, what else are they supposed to do, man? These are the things they have to do to kind of put their name out there.
I get it.
And get some recognition.
I get it.
There's no fault on BYU or Coastal Carolina side, my opinion.
And that's perfectly fine. But all I'm saying is I didn't think that the game was like the game was entertaining. That was good.
It was a good game. It came out to the last play of the game when the dude couldn't score on 1 yard line.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if both teams dropped in the rankings. It would not surprise me at all.
Right, as Carolina goes up the rankings for losing to Notre Dame at home. It makes perfect sense.
But it still wouldn't surprise me. It all makes
perfect sense.
And
both of those teams will beat Carolina, by the way.
But once again, it's going to show, and this may be more towards the college football playoff committee, but I don't want to do them multiple weeks in a row.
Yeah, we're not going to go down that rabbit hole.
But the thing is they're probably going to drop. I wouldn't be surprised if they both dropped because they showed, okay, y'all are both.
They're not going to drop.
Y'all are both two no-name teams.
They're not going to drop. Look.
I didn't even know Coastal was a football team.
Everybody in the country knows that neither one of these teams is going to the playoff, all right? Cincinnati is the only group of five team that has a legitimate chance of making the playoff. And they still probably aren't going to go. But what they did yesterday was prove that they belong in a New Year's Six. The winner of yesterday's game has a legitimate chance, if they go undefeated, to be in a New Year's Six bowl game.
They won't pass. Coastal's not dropping. Cincinnati.
Coastal's going to go to probably 14 or 15 in the country.
Even
BYU's not going to drop out the top 25.
Even without that game, Cincinnati still has a better resume than both those two teams. Even without that game.
That's if Cincinnati is left out of the playoff. Now, if Cincinnati gets into the playoff, one of those teams is going to a New Year's Six bowl game, and it's probably going to be Coastal.
I don't know. All I'm gonna
It sounds like you hating on the little guy, man.
I'm not hating on the little guy, but all I'm saying is that this is why people don't really respect the group of five.
Because they can't look. They try and schedule big boys. Big boys say you're not good enough. What else are they supposed to do, man?
And so
what else are they supposed to do?
So Cincinnati is holding out to play the big boy and take them on the number four team that is so overrated, the Ohio State Buckeyes.
And I hope they get that opportunity, but I just hope they don't fumble the bag.
And I don't think
if you
get
the opportunity,
you have the best, you have a top five defense in the country.
And Ohio State whoops that ass, then I don't want to hear nothing about, you know,
that's a better game than Ohio State's going to get in any team in the Big Ten.
I agree with you. I think Cincinnati can beat Ohio State. I'm just saying, don't fumble the bag. Don't act like a big boy. And then not be able to wear the pants.
But that's the thing. They want to take a chance on themselves and say, hey, we want to play somebody that's ranked higher than we are.
But you also know what Ohio State's thinking? We don't need you, Cincy, and we're not playing you.
And that's the exact same mentality Cincinnati has with BYU. And
so that's just a domino effect. And that's just how it's going to be for, I guess, from now to eternity.
Yeah.
We don't need you.
We don't need you. Just like, I mean, ECU, we play Charleston Southern next year. We don't need you. We don't need you. I'm sorry. It's a dog-eat-dog world out here. And that's my thought process. I just thought the way that the game came about was just kind of shoddy. It looked like they were scrambling. They were trying to pimp each other out. That's all I'm saying. And I've read a lot of blogs from across the American Athletic Conference that agree with me and said, look, BYU and Coastal Carolina, this game, like, yeah, it's going to be an entertaining game, but it's not proving anything to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all aren't doing anything for yourselves. You're not proving anything to anybody. It's a top 25 team. UCF should be a top 25 team. They're not. Tulsa, they're a top 25 team, but there's an asterisk there.
Mm-hmm.
I think if SMU beat us, that's a top 25 team. They didn't beat us. We beat them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I'm going to say. Artie, let's wrap this thing up. We've done Walk the Planks. Do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, my damn Bears about to let's get off, man.
Yeah, I just saw my Falcons they're down by 5 right now. So
have a good week, Pirate Nation.
Yep. Stay safe, stay healthy. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Make sure you leave a review. We want that review, okay? Send us a screenshot. We've offered several weeks in a row to pay for somebody's sup dogs. I'll pay for your sup dogs. Just send me a screenshot of your review. That's all we're asking for. All right? So, all right, Pirate Nation, that's all I've got. For Artie and me, Artie's watching his Bears.
I'm watching them just collapse, but we out, Pirate Nation. We love you.